The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press, the Religion News Service, and National Public Radio. Our first article was published by the Associated Press on January 10, written by Giovanna Del Orto, Luis Andres Hena, and Peter Smith. L.A. wildfires destroy numerous houses of worship. Clergy and congregants vow to persevere. Flames were already attacking the campus of Pasadena Jewish Temple and Center when the cantor, Ruth Berman Harris, and three companions rushed in to rescue its sacred Torah scrolls. Physically, that's all that is left of the 80-year-old synagogue destroyed by wildfires that also destroyed a mosque, a Catholic parish, and a half-dozen Protestant churches. Many members of these congregations were among the thousands of Angelenos who lost their homes this week. As the threat of new fires persisted, clergy were left with the huge challenges of offering comfort and pondering paths toward rebuilding and recovery. "There's absolutely nothing except for a few walls and the empty space," said the Pasadena Jewish Center's executive director, Melissa Levy. Nevertheless, hundreds of its congregants have gone to the site to say goodbye, to the places where they celebrated milestones in their faith and family lives, Levy added. Navigating road closures to rescue Torah scrolls. Berman Harris, along with her husband, another congregant, and a custodian, managed to get the Torah scrolls into their cars and whisked away to safety before the synagogue was engulfed in flames. "It's the heartbeat of any Jewish community," she said of the Torah. That's why, despite road closures, she rushed in to try to save the scrolls after a congregant who lives near the temple called her to say the flames were getting closer. Several houses of worship were destroyed in Pasadena and Altadena, including a mosque, Masjid al-Taq, leaving its small, tight-knit community mourning the loss of a beloved gathering place. "One of its board members lost his house in the fire, along with at least 10 of the faithful," said the volunteer, Imam Janat Asai. "So many families called it their second home," Asai said of the mosque. "It was started as an African-American place of worship, and in the past 20 years had attracted diverse young families, as well as professionals and college students. Its backyard had become a place of community celebration nightly, when breaking the fast during Ramadan, with children doing art activities like painting murals. It was a sense of belonging for us," Asai said. Samar Ganoum, a professor at the University of Redlands, has prayed at the mosque with her family since the 1990s. It was Ganoum's daughter who alerted that the mosque was destroyed. When she called and said, "Mom, the masjid is burned," and was in tears, "my heart broke," Ganoum said. Earlier in the day, she had gone for midday prayer to another mosque, where congregants call the Salat Istisa, a prayer for rain rooted in the Islamic belief that God's mercy provides sustenance. Community fundraising efforts have already started to rebuild, with donations surpassing $100,000 by Friday night. For Friday prayer, Asai shared a list of neighboring mosques. For Ramadan, the faithful hope to be able to secure a place to gather again as a community. The wildfires destroyed Altadena Community Church as well as several homes owned by the members of the congregation of about 60 people, said its pastor, the Reverend Paul Telstrom. "It's shocking," said Telstrom. "It's a reminder to all of us of the fragility of life. Worship without a building." The church, built in the 1940s, was known for its colorful stained glass and for hosting a popular choir. The church's Facebook page shared images of the building engulfed in flames. Another photo showed parishioners singing outdoors. Underneath the image, it read, "We are the church. We can worship anywhere." This is a big blow, but it will not impede our progress, Telstrom said. The most important takeaway is that we are the church, not the building. Altadena United Methodist Church also burned down, as did homes of many members, according to Facebook posts by its pastor, the Reverend J. Andre Wilson. Our building is gone, he wrote, but you and us are the church. Fire spoils church's weekend wedding plans. Ricardo Springs II, a church member who came to see the remains of the building, said the congregation had been planning this Sunday to host the wedding of a couple that recently joined the church. The devastation is just heartbreaking, he said, but God will see us through it. My sons grew up in this church. My wife grew up in the church, he told the Associated Press on Thursday. It's an awesome church community. St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Altadena also was destroyed. It was with a broken heart that I share with you the news that our church building is lost, the Reverend Carrie Patterson Grindon, the rector, wrote on Facebook. She said several community members lost their homes and the church staff was organizing a network of mutual support. We will need one another in the days ahead as we face these devastating losses, she wrote. I am here for you, and I know our community will hold together and love and support one another through whatever lies ahead. Prayers and faith bolster affected congregations. The parish of St. Matthew, an Episcopal church in Pacific Palisades, whose campus also includes a preschool through eighth grade school, reported that all of its clergy residences were destroyed, though its sanctuary, middle school, and other buildings were intact. The church has hosted online gatherings using the liturgy of compline or night prayer. We feel your prayers, the school's chaplain, the Reverend Stephanie Wilson, said in the Thursday night online gathering, responding to the outpouring of concern from people far and near. We need them, and we want them, and we feel that you're with us right now. In Pacific Palisades, Corpus Christi Catholic Church was destroyed. Its website displayed a photo of the skeletal remains of the church, accompanied by the message, I have no words. Our beautiful church in Pacific Palisades, as of this morning. Also destroyed was Pacific Palisades Presbyterian Church, which posted photos on its Facebook page showing the church intact before the fire and in ruins afterward. Throughout the stricken areas, faith leaders were concerned about congregation members who lost their homes and have found temporary shelter with friends or in hotels. But they are finding hope in their faith and their communities. Nothing in my faith has been rocked by this, said Melissa Levy of the Pasadena Jewish Center. If anything, it's been bolstered by the support we have received and we can give. Synagogues still standing offer a place of worship. The LA area is home to more than 600,000 Jews, the largest Jewish community, second largest community in the United States. The Pasadena Synagogue also lost its preschool, and in Pacific Palisades, fire seriously damaged another synagogue and a Chabad center, said Rabbi Noah Farkas, president of the Jewish Federation LA. Synagogues away from danger will host services over the weekend for those congregants who cannot attend their regular temples. And volunteers have been helping with everything from food and cash to providing a dedicated text messaging line for hundreds of displaced families who have no idea what, if anything, of their homes survived the fire. I've been here 32 years, and literally every person I know has lost their house, Rabbi Zush Kunin said of the neighborhood of his Chabad center. Apocalyptic is the word I've been using. As clouds of smoke started building in the area earlier this week, Kunin said, he and other staff escorted about 100 children from their school to safety through growing traffic jams to the Pacific Coast Highway, and then ran back to save the scrolls. The fire damaged classrooms and other spaces, though the sanctuary is intact. But even as they remain determined to rebuild, the immediate priority for Kunin, Levy, and Farkas is helping their congregations and the broader communities who have lost all of their possessions. Even with the people of means, everything is gone, Kunin said. Our next article is also related to LA and was published by the Religion News Service on January 18, written by Bob Smetana. Faith communities help LA fire victims with shelter necessities while planning for future. As firefighters began to get the California wildfires that caused massive destruction in and around LA under control, faith leaders and their communities have begun planning for a long, slow recovery while helping victims of the fire with shelter, food, and other essentials. In the days since the fires began, Victory Bible Church in Pasadena has become a hub for distributing supplies like food, water, and toiletries to victims of the fire. Some of those victims are members of the congregation, said Jonathan DeCuir, pastor of Victory Bible. I have 42 members whose homes are burned to the ground, he said. The church has started a fire relief fund and a call center where people can dial in and ask for help. It's also collecting gift cards so victims can buy the supplies they need rather than getting handouts. Something about being able to purchase the things they need has been empowering to victims, said DeCuir. We call that the dignity phase, he said. We've discovered that people want to go into the stores and buy what they need. DeCuir said Victory Church is also trying to collect donations for laptops, iPads, and other computers, as many people have lost the technology they relied on for day-to-day life. The church has also helped fire victims find housing at local hotels and Airbnbs and is working on what DeCuir calls sustainability plans for the next 6 months. We're trying to provide people what they need and keep them housed until some of the insurance money and FEMA assistance starts to come in, he said. For DeCuir, who became senior pastor of Victory Bible, a congregation of 700 a year ago, the past week has been a crash course in how to respond to a disaster. He said he's been keeping connected to other churches as well as city officials through a Pasadena group called the Clergy Community Coalition, which includes faith groups, charitable nonprofits, and city services, all working together. Our secret weapon is unity, he said. That's been our tagline here. Our secret weapon has been the ability to come together and hold each other up, spiritually and practically. He also has been in touch with other clergy affected by the fire. So far, he knows of a dozen pastors who lost homes to the fires and at least 9 churches that were destroyed in Altadena and Pasadena. Reverend Najuna Smith-Pollard, pastor of Word of Encouragement Community Church and assistant director of public and community engagement at the Center for Religion and Civic Culture at the University of Southern California, said her phone had been ringing off the hook since the fires began. Most of those phone calls have been focused on connecting people who want to donate resources to faith communities who get relief supplies to people in need. She said faith communities in LA tend to fall into 2 categories, those directly affected by the fires and those outside the region affected by the fire but who want to help. Those faith groups in areas affected by the fire can deliver direct aid to people in need, but other churches still have a role to play. We have a mandate not to leave our brothers and sisters out there hanging, she said. She said almost every faith leader she knows is involved. Many are collecting aid, others are helping church or community members find housing, while still others are using their social media to highlight raising requests from those in need. Smith-Pollard also said there are a number of formal networks of clergy and faith groups who are working together to respond to the wildfires. such as LA Voice and the Clergy Community Coalition in Pasadena, as well as more informal networks and friendships among faith leaders. I don't know of any churches that are operating as lone rangers, she said. We're experiencing a moment where everyone is working together. Smith Pollard said clergy are also beginning to think about the long-term rebuilding after the fires, which will require billions in assistance and take years. For now, they are encouraging those in communities affected by the fires to not make any rash decisions. She worries older residents or those in a crisis because of the fire will end up making decisions they will regret later. We want to support you because we don't want you to feel like you are on your own and nobody knows your story, and then you end up giving your property up, she said. Stay in your homes, maintain your property, and we're here to support you. From those outside LA, Smith Pollard asked for prayer and financial support for the fire victims and an end to political squabbling over who is to blame. There will be time for accountability in the future, she said, but that time is not now. It really has to be an all-hands-on-deck community engagement to rebuild and restore and return, she said. Along with helping their congregation and communities with their immediate needs, spiritual comfort, and planning for the future, some clergy in LA will also have to navigate the challenging task of rebuilding churches that were lost to wildfire. At least a dozen congregations were destroyed, and others suffered major damage. Among them was the Altadena Community Church, a 60-person congregation whose pastor had just announced his retirement due to health concerns. Houses of worship lost to the wildfires face a long road back. It's going to take a really long time to rebuild those churches, said Charles Cutler, president of Church West Insurance Services, which works with about 4,000 churches and other Christian ministries. While churches and other houses of worship lost to the wildfires likely had insurance coverage, that insurance might not cover the cost of replacing what was lost. And with thousands of other buildings also lost in the recent disasters, and in places like Altadena and Pacific Palisades, entire communities leveled, congregations will find themselves facing rising prices for construction supplies, long waits for permits, and competition for the contractors to get the work done. There's a line of people that are waiting to rebuild their buildings, Cutler said. Cutler said churches and other houses of worship lost during the current fires will likely take at least 3 years to rebuild. During that time, those congregations will also have to find alternate spaces to meet in, which insurance may not cover all the cost of, as many policies only cover a year of alternative space. Tithes and offerings may also go down, making it hard to afford the cost of rebuilding. As the fires recede, Victory Bible has begun work on a long-term legacy land project to provide families with the support services to navigate the rebuilding process, including planning clinics on dealing with contractors, insurance, and legal issues. Many of the homes that burned in the wildfires had been in families for 3 or 4 generations, said DeCure. He and other church leaders worry some families may sell off their properties due to frustration with the long process. I've been telling people, I know you're grieving, but hold on to your land, he said. DeCure hopes people outside of L.A. will see the devastation from the wildfires and be motivated to help survivors of the fires get back on their feet. We are real people, and this situation has devastated our community, he said. The way you can help now is with resources. People are in need of some stability when it comes to housing right now. They need whatever help is possible. Now, from the Associated Press, a piece written on January 9 by Meg Kinnard and entitled some notable quotes from Jimmy Carter's funeral. Jimmy Carter was remembered at his funeral at Washington National Cathedral as a man of character and something of a miracle with prophetic vision. From relatives to former aides and the current president, a look at some of the memorable and quotable moments from Carter's funeral. President Joe Biden. Repeating the word character several times as Carter's chief attribute, Biden said the former president taught him the imperative that everyone should be treated with dignity and respect. We have an obligation to give hate no safe harbor, Biden said, also noting the importance of standing up to abuse and power. The very journey of our nation is a walk of sheer faith, to do the work, to be the country we say we are, to be the country we say we want to be, Biden said. Today, many think he was from a bygone era, but in reality, he saw well into the future. I miss him, but I take solace in knowing that he and Rosalind are reunited, he concluded. To the entire Carter family, thank you, and I mean this sincerely, for sharing them both with America and the world. We love you all. From Jason Carter. His political life and his presidency, for me, was not just ahead of its time, it was prophetic, Carter's grandson said. He had the courage and strength to stick to his principles, even when they were politically unpopular. As governor of Georgia, half a century ago, he preached an end to racial discrimination and an end to mass incarceration. As president in the 1970s, he protected more land than any other president in history. 50 years ago, he was a climate warrior who pushed for a world where we conserved energy, limited emissions, and traded our reliance on fossil fuels for expanded renewable sources. By the way, he cut the deficit, wanted to decriminalize marijuana, deregulated so many industries that he gave us cheap flights, and, as you heard, craft beer. Basically, all of those years ago, he was the first millennial. And he could make great playlists, as we've also heard. Andrew Young. Seated at a microphone, Young, whom Carter appointed as United Nations ambassador, drew laughs from the crowd when he called Carter something of a miracle, noting, "It's hard for me to understand how you could get to be president from Plains, Georgia." Young, who is black and was a pastor nearby, said he was nervous sometimes driving through the small town. "Time and again, I saw in him the ability to achieve diversity by the personality and upbringing," Young said, of Carter. "He went out of his way to embrace those of us who grew up in all kinds of conflict." And now our last article, written and published by the National Public Radio writer Anna King on December 29. Under a grandma moon, Native Americans honor their sacred pact with salmon. Tastes like time. Across the Cascades, Melina Fairlight Pinkham, who uses they-them pronouns, is a lawyer and is enrolled with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. They say for them, salmon is a 10,000-year-old taste, which recalls their ancestors. "It just tastes like time," Pinkham said. "I can feel my descendants through the years. I can feel my ancestors. I can feel the things they went through." On a tall bluff that overlooks the South Puget Sound in one direction and sparkling headlights on I-5 in another, members of the Nisqually Indian tribe gathered for a winter moon celebration. These lands are part of the lush home of the Nisqually tribe. In their creation story, salmon were the first to offer themselves to the people. But a contract was made. The people must also care for the salmon. As they celebrated the Native American New Year on December 21, the Nisqually also honored their sacred relationship with the fish. Grandma Moon. The Winter Moon celebration is marked with a bonfire for the community and traditional canoe songs punctuated with drumming. The celebration is a time to be together to celebrate Mother Earth and her time to sleep, the shortest day of the year. A time to rejoice in the Milky Way and feel the earth shift towards spring, explains Joyce McLeod, a Nisqually elder. It's also a time when families can come together and pray for what's ahead. They gift fruit, candy, and small handmade presents to each other, like fresh cedar wreaths to protect the home all year. McLeod said this gathering is about earth, stars, and the moon. Grandma Moon, we always called her Grandma Moon, because she was overall caretaker of all life, of all time, McLeod said. Grandma Moon. So when she's full and abundant, that's when winter solstice happens. The Nisqually say that they and the salmon started right here together at the beginning of time. But colonization, overfishing, logging, development, pollution, and cutoff habitat have been hard on these ancient salmon runs. I don't want to be responsible to show salmon on a PDF to my grandkids, said Hanford McLeod. What's good for the people and good for the environment is good for the salmon, said Willie Frank III, son of the late fishing rights advocate Billy Frank Jr. Frank III said they used to fish 7 months of the year. Now it's down to about 7 days. So when you talk about spirituality, you talk about religion. You talk about what the salmon mean to us, said Frank III. You know, it's like if you were only able to go to church 7 or 8 days out of the year. How would you feel if that was your main kind of your main religion? Frank III said that the growing disconnection between people and salmon is symptomatic of larger social and environmental issues. You know, we're off balance a bit because of, you know, the environment and the resources that we're not protecting like we should as humans, Frank III said. We have run out of time for today's broadcast of Religion in the News. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope that you'll listen again next time. I am Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.